This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 14th day of March, 2013.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. This is Commodity Week. Our panelists today include Jackie Bakes of Stuart Peterson from Champaign County, Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, and Mike Zuzolo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, let's start our conversation with this question. Jackie Vakes, how did the expiration of the March contracts in Chicago go, in your opinion?
Well, I think, you know, the fact that we saw the corn contract go off, you know, more than 20 cents above the May, and we saw the bean contract go off about 30 cents above the May beans, it would say to me, as an old trader, that we will probably expect to see the new spot months try to ascend to the levels that we saw March actually expire at.
Do you agree with that, Mike?
Yeah, I think the big thing that probably happened in the trade that we haven't been used to in a while, Todd, has been that the farmers did reportedly sell quite a bit of grain. I was in eastern Indiana early Thursday morning, and on my way over towards an ethanol plant, on my way back from the ethanol plant area that I was traveling to, there were a lot of grain trucks on the road. And so I think we probably also had a softer basis because cash selling came in as well. Didn't look like the export sales were bad at all, you know, on Thursday. So I guess I kind of feel like Jackie is that you've got that discount in the May. It doesn't mean that everything's all over with the way those markets closed up on Thursday.
So apparently, Dan, because of trucks on the road and grain moving into the marketplace and pushing down in the basis, at least in the cash market, these two believe that'll cause the May contracts to try to move higher to fill those gaps. From our conversation on Thursday afternoon, I take it you agree with that.
Well, usually when we have tight supplies like we have and we get breaks in the market, farmer sales will dry up and you'll see a basis begin to kind of improve a little bit. When I looked this morning, I saw the bean basis popping up a little bit after yesterday's break. So I was on the road pretty much here on Friday, so I don't know what happened to the basis. But my guess is that this basis level for spot commodities are going to stay pretty firm until we see what that March 28th report's going to tell us on grain stocks. But there's no doubt that at least on the soybean side, we did see some farmers let go of some soybeans up at this $15 level. That kind of allowed them all to get $15 cash, and we did see some country movement. I don't think it was great by any means, but there was enough movement in the U.S., and then we saw some hedge pressure come in from South America to knock them down.
Let's stay with the grain stocks report, Dan, at the end of the month. You have some thoughts on how that process will ensue and what it will mean, not maybe this month when those stocks numbers come out, but what will be left in the end of the year. Can you explain your position there?
Well, I think you have to, number one, what everybody's going to be looking at is whether or not the March number confirms the stocks level that was reported on the January report, which was as of December 1st, whether that confirms that or negates that. And that is going to be the big hurdle to get through. If it confirms that our feed disappearance is running as large as what the December 1st stocks number implies, then USDA, of course, they won't have a balance sheet to work out that day. That'll come in the next April report, but it would imply that feed usage is at least 200 million bushels too low. And then with their 634 bushel ending stocks level, if you bump up feed usage 200 million, then you bring ending stocks down to 432 million. And I'm in the opinion that it would be very difficult to see ending stocks fall below 800. So I'm in the opinion that either we'll have to ration 400 million bushels of stocks out of the ethanol equation. We'll have to maybe import 150 million bushels of Brazilian corn. We may have to feed 150 million bushels of soft red winter wheat. So there's, it just looks to me, if there's 400 million bushels, that's going to have to be, we're going to have to come up with, I think, to get through the end of the year. And it's going to be real tricky, especially the way early planting looks like that's going to turn into possibly late planting. I think everybody's a week or two out, try to get some early August corn up into the Corn Belt might be a real challenge this year.
Jackie, is there a fundamental reason to believe that usage on the livestock side is as high, that extra 200 million bushels, as maybe Dan has been thinking?
Well, we certainly haven't cut the livestock herd nearly enough to be able to justify where we're at on feed usage. And so I think that Dan's right on when it comes to the extra 200 million. Now, whether the USDA is actually going to step up to the plate or figure out some other way to adjust it out is hard to say. You know, Dan talked about importing corn. We're probably going to be in a similar situation in beans in that respect. And, you know, just how much of that do we want to do? And so it's going to come down to, I think, the cash market's going to have to do a tremendous job of being able to ration. And we're already seeing some of that. You know, when you talk about livestock, we're already seeing wheat going into some rations out there. So I think that fundamentally, yes, I think that 200 million is right on. Now, how USDA handles it is another question.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch, and interesting in the grain stocks. It could, Jackie, mean a much higher old crop corn price, I suppose.
No question about that. I think that's what everybody's watching for. You know, and the question will be is, are we going to, is the trade going to believe that before the report comes out at the end of the month, and are we going to trade it into the market prior to the report, or are we actually going to sit back here, kind of trade a range, and wait to see once what the report actually says? That's going to be the exciting part.
Be careful. Too, is that USDA may find a couple hundred million bushels, too. So these stock reports are volatile, and they can swing either way. So, even though I lean toward the idea that corn supplies are going to be very, very skinny, it's a possibility that USDA could find more bushels, or find out that the feed implied feed disappearance number that was reported on the December report is not as strong as that indicated, and therefore we may not be quite as tight as one thought we were after the January report numbers came out.
Mike, I know you use the numbers a lot, and you're a data person. What's your thought on this process?
I think when it comes to the corn, I think in a taking a step back from what, not trying to add to what Dan and Jackie already, I think, correctly talked about, I think that a big thing that we have to start to talk about, especially if we have any kind of planting delays in areas that have irrigation that could bring down both planted acres and national yield, is start to have that conversation that the world coarse grain stocks are at 12 point whatever percent, and they are the tightest of all of the other stocks out there. And the fact that we could very quickly in the market, I think, move from talking about a 2 billion bushel carryover to all of a sudden talking to a sub 1 billion bushel carryover with just a couple flicks of a pencil. And I think that's where we're headed in the next 30 days, Todd. And I think, you know, when it comes to what Dan was talking about in the corn, I was thinking the exact same thing in the beans. You add 10 to 15 to crush, you add 10 to 15 to exports on the stocks report for beans, you're sub 100 million bushel carryover, and all of a sudden you erase what the USDA WASDE numbers said to us last week and how the market has tried to factor that in. You didn't feed the bull in the bean report from WASDE, and you didn't feed the bear in the report from WASDE. And as a result, July corn's gone up about 20 cents since the report, and the July beans have gone down about 30 cents.
Well, that's exactly right. And one of the things I was going to bring up, too, you know, we did notice that they put 25 million more bushels into imports on corn on this last report. We can't figure that they may not do that again. But Mike's right on. When you look at the West, my guys in the West are already telling me that they're going to plant 5,000 to 7,000 less in population on corn, which reduces their potential for yield. We've got guys out there that put on 14 inches of water last year and averaged 239 bushels and have been now told this year 4 inches is all you're getting. You're not getting any more than that for irrigation. Those are wild cards that are sitting out there. And, you know, with 13 foot of snowpack, where's that water going to come from? You know, that a 13 foot snowpack is nothing compared to what they need from that standpoint. And so I couldn't agree more. I think that we can go from being, just like other years, extremely bearish, perhaps, with a very bearish outlook and a very quick change to the other side. Especially, you know, when you look at the West has carried us for how many years now? And the trade tends to discount them because they are irrigated. And so if they can't carry us and we start to have delayed planting here because of wet and cold weather, and we already know they've got delayed planting down south, all of a sudden, we go from this situation of being so bearish to suddenly churning it around completely in a very quick amount of time.
I think at this point, I need to get a gauge on where everybody is, old crop and new crop, corn and soybeans, bearish, bullish, friendly, just so we can move forward in the process. We'll start with you, Jackie.
I am on old crop. I'm still bullish on both. I believe that we have potential, but I also realize that if basis does its job, if basis really, really increases, we may not see the response in the corn market and in the bean market. New crop, I'm cautiously friendly to corn. I'm a little less friendly with beans because I think we could see some additional bean acres coming out of the south.
And wheat?
And wheat, I think wheat could actually lead the way out here, to be honest with you. You know, when you look at the discount that U.S. wheat is trading to the Black Sea and to the French wheat, we shouldn't be at the prices that we're at right now. And so I guess I'm expecting that we could see some increases in export sales.
Mike Zuzula?
I think, you know, in a context of a 3 to 10% rally, a potential, Todd, I would put it in that context. I'm friendly wheat. I'm friendly new crop corn. I'm more lukewarm the old crop corn, especially with the changes that we've seen here with the wheat coming on as far as being a true substitute for the corn and end users finding another way to get either sorghum or wheat into the channels for the domestic and the foreign needs. I'm lukewarm on the old crop beans, kind of waiting to see what the next 10 days bring us. I'm still where I was at the beef house meeting on the new crop beans. I'm really nervous about new crop beans making a high similar to 2004, and I'm still really looking hard at getting into the 14 hedges for beans. You know, every 1 million acreage increase in planted acres and a 43 bushel per acre yield puts you at about another 30 to 35 million bushel ending stocks number. So to inflate the ending stocks from 280 to 325 doesn't take a lot, depending on what this weather does. So I have to kind of rob Peter to pay Paul when it comes to new crop corn friendliness at the expense of new crop bean negativity.
And Dan Zwicker.
I think the best opportunity for the markets to show price strength has to be here during the next 30 to 60 days, because I think once you get past that point, the large South American crop is going to be a pretty good price depressant on both corn and soybeans as those crops enter the export market. And also, I think the strength in the dollar is going to really aggravate that situation in a deflationary mode. So I think what opportunities we have on the upside, I think is going to come here between now and maybe planting. Once you get past that, I think you have to be at least take on a very defensive type posture in the market, because that large South American crop is going to be competing with us all summer and all the way into the fall month.
You're listening, of course, to Commodity Week. This edition was recorded on the 14th day of March, a Thursday. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting is with us, along with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson. This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 14th day of March. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason in studio and on the phone line with us today, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from here in Champaign County, Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker from CGB Enterprises. He's based in Mandeville, Louisiana. Let's continue our conversation, talk a bit more about the fundamentals of the marketplace, at least in old crop corn. Some new things are working their way through the system. Many ethanol plants, Dan, have shut down or are beginning to think about shutting down, I suppose, on lack of corn. And then, of course, there are RINs, or the Renewable Identification Number certificates, that are available and have spiked in price. Can you tell me how those two things work into the marketplace?
Well, I think the big jump in RIN prices that we're seeing is based upon the idea that production of ethanol is going to slow down significantly because of the small supply of corn. And since it's mandated that you have to put so many bushels or so many gallons of ethanol in your fuel, then your larger oil producers are buying these RINs, and they're going to use RINs as substitutes rather than have to put ethanol, because ethanol is going to be hard to come by, I think, toward the end of the marketing year. So I think that's what's going on, is your ethanol plants are shutting down one by one as the inventory of cash corn in their buying area dries up, and they can no longer afford to go bid it out any further and make any money. So then they basically shut down. And I think you're going to see that continue as we go forward if that March 1 corn stocks number is verified to be very low. So that is why the, at least my understanding of why the RIN is upwards of a dollar is as the blenders are going to have to buy those RINs to offset the lack of ethanol to blend into their corn later this summer.
I suppose, Jackie, it may be important to note at this time that a high-priced RIN does not desperately or actually mean that there will be a high-priced corn, because it's kind of the opposite and would have the opposite impact in the corn market if they're related very much at all.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think, you know, that I think Dan's assessment is right. I heard a totally different assessment yesterday in speaking with someone who I respect, and they claim that they think the RIN market has gone wild because there's a belief out there that we could actually see ethanol mandate increase, which I think would be craziness, but that's the word that they heard on the street. And therefore, you know, everybody knows there's not enough corn around to meet a 15% ethanol mandate, much less a 10% ethanol mandate. So do they work together? No, they're not necessarily related to each other at all. In fact, if they're buying RINs because they don't believe they're going to have enough corn, then that means we're not producing ethanol and we're not using corn. And so that would be a depressing factor when it comes to the corn market.
On Friday of last week, the 8th day of March, Scott Irwin and Daryl Good wrote about this particular issue. It's on the Farm Doc Daily website, so you can go back and look at it at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. And Dan and you were both correct in some of what you had to say as far as it showing up in this Farm Doc article. One of the items suggested that first the RINs and the price of corn may not and aren't necessarily related to each other, that the lack of availability of corn to produce ethanol has something to do with RINs being used, but they contend that it's for 2014, not for current years, so that it's much speculation and looking forward to advanced biofuels coming in. And it does have to do with the blend wall that we're not quite to, but that eventually we will get to sometime in 2013, maybe 2014, so that it will have to use RINs to fill the gap between the blend wall and the mandate.
Well, and it would make sense in a lot of ways because of the fact that RINs last for 2 years before they expire. And we know that there was a lot of overproduction that went on during the last two-year period. And so, you know, that's something I hadn't really thought about. And I didn't read the article, I'm sorry to say.
Well, I didn't read the article until I voiced it for my Illini Farm Report on Thursday afternoon. So I went back through and read it and read the conclusions. And if you just want to jump to the bottom of the article, you get the idea. But there's some really good graphs in there. One that has a RIN market that goes straight up, and it's actually the numbers from the RINs, because you can go out and find those numbers. What else fundamentally should we be concerned about, Mike Zuzulo, in the marketplace? Ethanol plants that might shut down. I suppose the livestock sector is the other place, but will they slow down or not?
No, I think they'll feed wheat. I think that was pretty much put to bed this past week, Todd, and I think that's a good reason why the wheat was able to lead the corn out on, I believe it was Wednesday's trade. We got kind of word, rumor mill ideas that Hereford, Texas was bidding soft red wheat. From one of my contacts, he emailed me, and I called a client down in Stinnett, Texas, and asked him to call Hereford because he deals with them. And he said, yeah, Burlington Northern put out bids for up to 10 unit train car loads of soft red wheat instead of corn. We don't know if this is a trend or not, but it did happen. And so because of the lack of corn availability, corn and wheat aren't competitors anymore. Wheat's now a substitute because corn's not on the table as a viable competitor with wheat. And so I think that's where, as you get to the springtime, and like Dan was talking about this next 30-day time period, and we talked about that in down near Belleville a couple weeks ago, it seems to me that you're going to need, if you're the corn market, to kind of feed the bull after the planting time is over with, and that bull needs to be the wheat market, i.e., how the hard red wheat comes out of dormancy and how we're doing on our exports and our export sales for soft red wheat on Thursday. were something like 50% over the four-week average. One thing on the ethanol side that I think needs to be thought about is the big oil has already said that because they don't want to pay higher for RINs and it's hurting their cost structure, that they're fully willing, able, and capable of exporting the unleaded out without blending any ethanol into it and just sending it over to Asia or into the Near East or into other countries that would gladly take it. And that's paraphrasing what they're essentially saying. I think that's a real concern. I think we have gotten another level higher in terms of a risk that we will see a temporary suspension of the mandate by EPA, because the thought was that we wouldn't touch the ethanol mandate. It only made gas prices go higher. But with the refiners, some refiners saying they'll export the gas out of this country, that kind of nullifies that argument. So I think producers need to be aware of that with cash in the bin right now.
You mean they'd short supply the United States of gasoline?
That's correct. Because they're not going to think of the cost structure of 1,400% increase in RIN costs since the first of the year.
Yeah, but the RIN cost, well, yeah, but the RINs weren't worth anything. They were worth 1 to 3 cents. They have value, but they only have value when they can be substituted for a gallon of ethanol, which can be worth what? Probably 80, 90, maybe twice what they're, maybe three times what they're worth today, I would think.
And you know what, Todd? You're 100% right, but I think the media and the political will is changing and the winds are changing. I've seen two articles in the Financial Times that have been really bashing, in my opinion, the ethanol, and one in the Wall Street Journal where they talk specifically about crude only being down 1% since the end of February, but gas prices are up 12%, and they named the article the ethanol gas pump surcharge. So you're right. It's just how does the rest of the world perceive it?
But I still don't get why it is. There must be a reason, if you're hearing this, that the oil companies would want to do such a thing, because it would seem that there would be a great risk to me that the United States would simply say you cannot export gasoline.
And they could
do that easily. I mean, they'd just put the tariff on. They'd just make it impossible to export a gallon of gasoline. That's too much of a security risk.
But I'm saying we're getting to that point at this stage. I think producers need to be aware of that.
All right. Well, I don't usually get up on a horse, but I guess that time I did, huh?
Sometimes it's me and I like it.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. Some final thoughts from each of you.
I just believe in this, in the environment that we live in today, that you cannot run a business without knowing what all the tools are and knowing how to use all the tools to be able to protect your bottom line. And that means, you know, we hear from guys all the time, I sold too early. Well, in this day and age, you know, with the rents that we have and everything else, you can't necessarily afford to sell too early. So you've got to know how you can help yourself. And so if there's one thing I'd like to urge them to do, it's to educate themselves on all the options that are out there.
The hedge fund methodology, I think, Todd, after the USDA report, the WASDE report, was kind of confirmed to me and helped solidify the idea that the fund money is chasing demand. If it's poor demand, they're short. If it's good demand, they're long. It's not about supply at this stage of the game when it comes to the managed money. I think that's a nice thing to incorporate into your marketing plan for 2013.
For the most part, the market looks like it's trying to pull out of a winter low and put together some kind of spring rally, but it's still, I think, generally a bearish cast over the marketplace.
And thank you so much. That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Mike Zuzalo's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson out of Champaign, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.